And welcome to another edition of Zoomed In. I'm your host, Brandon Chapman, and I am really pleased to be joined by the esteemed Margaret Vaughn, an associate professor of language, literacy, and technology here in the College of Education, and somebody who's very passionate about this project this is what we're here to share. It's a book, you know, and a lot of faculty have books. You have a lot of books, in fact, but this one especially is pretty awesome. So I want to have you, I'll say what the name is, but then I want to have you be the one to share more about it. So the book is called Student Agency in the Classroom. Honoring Student Voice in the Classroom is kind of the sub heading, but Student Agency in the Classroom by Margaret Vaughn. So I guess start us off and just tell me a little bit about the book we'll dive in after that, and I've got some more questions for you. But tell us about the book.
Brandon, thanks so much for having me on here. This is really an honor and a pleasure to talk with you. So this is a book, Student Agency, and it's really at the core and the passion of my work and kind of who I am as a teacher, who I was as a first grade teacher back in the day, who I am as a parent, and who I am as just sort of a human being in the world. I try really hard to honor people's agency. And so this topic is really near and dear to me as just an individual. So the book really evolved over several years. I think just kind of, it's my collective experiences as a classroom teacher and as a researcher, as a teacher educator, as a professional developer sort of in schools and working alongside teachers. And what I found is that student agency, although it's an important topic, it's not really talked about in a concrete manner. Let me just give you a kind of a quick example. So when I was a classroom teacher back in the day, about, you know, in 2000, when I first entered the classroom, I was just really committed to supporting kids, right? I mean, I think all teachers are at or whatever grade level they're at. And one experience that really sticks out in my mind, there was a little boy in my class and I was teaching first grade, and kids at that age are developmentally at different places. And my one student came in and he drew a picture, and he was very shy and very, you know, very a little bit withdrawn. And, he would say, you know, Mrs. Vaughn, you know, I'd say, hello, tell me about your picture. And, you know, he would say bush hog, and I'd say, oh, okay, great. You know, and I share this in the book, and I've shared this in different vignettes that I've talked with my students and also just in my professional writing. And I'd say to him, I'd say, hey, tell me, does it live in the, you know, in the woods? And, you know, what does it eat? You know, I'm from a city. I've always been from a city. And so the idea of a bush hog at the time was like, oh, it's some kind of a hog, right? Like, I'm on
lives in the bushes or
yeah, you know, it must eat grass, it must eat bamboo or something like that. So, you know, and he would just kind of look at me like, and so I'd say, oh, okay. You know, this happened over several days until one day he just burst out and he was like, Mrs. Vaughn, like, this, a bush hog, it's not an animal, it's a piece of farming equipment. And so, of course, you know, in that moment, you know, you have a choice as a teacher to say, okay, like, wow, what a dummy I was to think of this. But instead I said, I just laughed. And I said, wow, like, you have so much to teach me, right? You have so much to show me. I'm not from this area. I'm from a city. You know, I don't know what bush hogs are. And so from that point on, I was so fortunate, Brandon, that happened within my first month or two of teaching. Because over that next month and over that next year, this student's completely transformed. He took it upon himself. He created chapter books. He became no longer withdrawn. He was the one that was leading discussions. Okay, Mrs. Vaughn, like, this is another thing. This, you have to do this with the hay. And, you know, and so he used that opportunity to really become a leader. And I, you know, I just was off to the side and said, tell me more, show me more. And I think that experience to me really signified, wow, I you know, you hear about a teachable moment. But for me, it was kind of beyond a moment, right? This was a way of thinking. It was like a lens of how to view students, right? Their backgrounds, their interests, their histories. And so for me, that was student agency. And that was back before I even knew what that was. And so kind of fast forward now, you know, 10 or 15 years working with teachers, and I'd say to teachers, you know, hey, can you tell me what student agency is? Or, you know, what do you think that is? And I've been in their classrooms, you know, I've done research projects. I'm so fortunate to have, you know, great relationships with many teachers. And they'd say, huh, what are you talking about? You mean like, is that an insurance, like some kind of a, and I just say, oh, okay, like, tell me what you're doing with students. And I knew very well, Brandon, that they were doing these really exciting things, you know, like having students lead discussions or having students, you know, run off and do a project that they were super passionate about or interested, or like a real problem or real issue or address something. And so it confounded me, but also made me think, well, that's an opportunity. You know, I don't think that topic, right? It's not something we kind of translate from theory to practice. And so I think at the core, just the work that I really try to do is how do we relate theory to practice. And I think the student agency for me, thinking back way back, you know, I guess, oh gosh, it's been 20 years, right? When that happened, that experience, you know, in terms of how do we cultivate those opportunities, but how do we also demystify it so that when we talk to teachers and when we talk to pre-service teachers, we say, hey, no, this is a real thing. This is something we can kind of not proceduralize, but also notice, build knowledge about, and construct classroom environments where we support students and their agency.
Yeah, and obviously I don't think it's necessary to put everything in its most simple form, but let's just say, you know, the elevator ride, you have 25, 30 seconds. Of course, sometimes it's more awkward than that, and it's a minute and a half, but if somebody were to say, what is student agency, you obviously don't have the time to tell them that whole story and build a rhythm toward the punchline of what it is. So if you're going in Cleveland Hall from floor 3 to floor 1, which is actually floor 2 because there's a ground floor, but let's just say you're going from the T&L department down to the dean's area, okay. And somebody said, you know, what do you do? Oh, I research student agency. Oh, what is that? What would you say in 20 seconds to really make that make sense to the layperson?
So I think in a nutshell, I'd say it's about how do you, those individual opportunities where students can make decisions, they can exert influence in their own environment, and they can structure and act on their own beliefs and intentions towards some end. It could be toward increasing their learning. It could be toward something they're interested in. So I think it's this notion of providing that space and that time and the energy for students to take opportunities and to be the self-generators and the leaders of their work.
Ding. Ah, and there's my floor. Perfect timing. That was that was wonderful.
A little long-winded, so sorry. I like to build it up.
Oh, no. Yeah. An agency in general. I mean, maybe it was against your better judgment, but you had the agency to say, yes, I will do this video podcast with you. And I'm so glad you are. What I'd love to know is the student agency, is it not something that's normally fostered within class settings? I mean, obviously, if we've got it all figured out, then there's no reason to maybe do more research. But right. But we obviously haven't. So tell me about maybe the deficiencies. So,
I love that. Well, and I think at the core of the way that I sort of view teaching too is that I really am a teacher advocate, you know, and I just kind of wanted to build this up. You know, part of, I would love to still be in a classroom right now, you know, and I love teaching at the core of my being. So I also want to sort of be careful to address the fact that you know, teachers know about these contexts. And they're, sorry, my dinger went off.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
I can make mine go off too, if you want to feel like. Yeah.
At the core, I'm a teacher advocate. So like, I think when we do this work too, there's always this notion of like, I need to fill this knowledge so that teachers will know. And so actually in the book, that's completely why I went out and I talked to as many teachers as I could to say, hey, what do you know about this? Mm-hmm. And maybe it's not called that in your context. So can you tell me about opportunities where this occurs? And so I just kind of want to set that up. But I do think that the larger conversation is some of the curricular changes that's been happening, like national reform, dating back to No Child Left Behind. You know, we have seen increased context where teachers have been told what to do. I mean, that's a big reason why I left the classroom. You know, everyone had to be on the same page at the same time, right? And there was a lack of teacher agency, a lack of like support for teacher professional decision making. And so I think although student agency is compelling and we all as individuals want to have agency in our own being and kind of in our own way of working, I think national reform models and national efforts, policy efforts have really restricted teachers in their autonomy. And so although they might want to allow for student agency, especially in literacy, for example, those opportunities are just getting diminished. They have been diminished now historically since, you know, the early 2000s. And, you know, with increased pay for performance measures, teachers are still being held accountable to those standardized assessments and student performance. So I forget what your question was, but I think it was related to...
If it was not something that was normally fostered in a classroom setting or some of the deficiencies, which... I think what you've told me, it makes complete sense. Like any research, I often ask the question, okay, you know, therefore what, or now what, you know, so we often will get some compelling data that come back to us and hey, look at this, but how do you turn that into something like better? So who helps reform the reform, right? Yeah. Who, if we've got this restrictive, you know, system in place, and we know that might not be best practice, how do we get it so that your research, which is awesome, and it's in this new book, is seen by the right people? And who might those right people be? Like, what do we do now so it's something that's living, breathing, and it makes a difference?
Well, I love that. Okay, so that kind of is such an important question. And I think having been in those data meetings where you see what principles and, you know, in larger context, you know, standardized assessments do matter. And of course, we want students to learn. And so one of a side project that has been really integral for me is that I've worked with some colleagues and we've developed a student agency profile, which is an assessment tool that teachers and schools and administrators can use to measure how students have about their sense of agency. And so really conversations when principals and administrators are having those data, Friday data meetings about where students are in their performance, they could use this tool to say, hey, wait a minute, like our kids aren't scoring well and they don't have any sense of agency. And so it's a tool that actually teachers can use to help guide them in, and also administrators to sort of have those sort of hard concrete conversations about, hey, this is a measure, this is an additional effective measure that we can look at that may explain. And so that's really the next leg of the work that I'm working on, is to figure out how do we make those, how do we explore those kinds of relationships, and does it matter in the context of some of those harder conversations? I mean, I think intuitively, and what we found in the, and I found in the book, and also with my research over the last decade or so, it does matter. I mean, student agency does matter. And so it's trying to figure out ways to have different kinds of conversations with principals, administrators, and policymakers so that they can see that actually it does have a relationship to potential student outcomes.
Yeah. One of the things, and I had seen on the dust jacket of the book that said unique approaches that teachers take. Obviously there is no one size fits all, but that's the weird inherent thing about the term best practice, is it almost says here is what the ideal is, and uniformity to this is what will bring the most success, right? So how can we have teachers that can adapt to individual needs and the agency, and not have it be so systematic, even if we know here's what works?
Yeah. So I think also in the book, I just kind of want to reference the last three chapters really do that. So one of the chapters talks about how do we cultivate a culture of agency in a school setting? And so it's really taking the principles in the book and talking about, okay, this is what it looks like, this is why it matters, and okay, this is how to implement it. And so I think some of those core practices is to ask students about what their vision is, like what is it that they're wanting to learn and why, but then also asking teachers and administrators, okay, what is your vision? What is it that you're trying to accomplish this year and why? And really continually inviting students, parents as well, administrators and teachers to ask that question, you know, what's their vision? Why does it matter? And then also to reflect on that, right? And to engage in critical conversations and reflective practice that looks at, you know, when my vision, let's say, is developing a context where, you know, students can choose the books that they want to read. Okay, so if we say that, then, and the administrator says, yeah, you know, I really, that sounds like a really critical vision, then maybe we need to rethink the types of resources that students are reading. So maybe the idea of having every teacher be on the same page at the same time is not necessarily a good practice that might support kids' agency, right? Because we know that no child is alike, right? Every individual student is different. And so I think reflecting, and then I think some of the other things, I'm trying to read quickly from the book here, enacting behaviors. And I think one of the questions is to really have superintendents, you know, what does agency mean for me as a teacher and an administrator? What does it mean for my students? And I think also just having that as a constant question, I think when you start to think about agency and ask questions like that, conversations shift. I mean, I think if I even asked you right now in your own work and I said, hey, like, do you feel you have a sense of agency? And if you didn't, or if you feel, I mean, I don't know, in your work, you probably strive to have a sense of agency, right? I mean, in your own individual context. And
absolutely.
What do you,
it's just my mean boss. He doesn't let me do what I want.
All right. And so what you would say then,
for the record.
What I would say is then, okay, so like, how do you negotiate that, right? Mm-hmm. So what are some ways that we can help to have conversations about negotiating that? So what are the constraints? And what are the ways that we can support you in kind of navigating that? And so I think it's almost, I feel like breaking down barriers between administrators and teachers. And I can be real honest, when I was, and this is just a recent phenomena for me, but, and this was informed by a research project that I'd done with some colleagues, but for the longest time, I almost thought as though, you know, administrators were the ones that sort of put the no and kind of dampened, you know, teachers and their agency, right? But I have really been, there was a few years back, about 2 years now, where we did a national research project where we interviewed several principals and we said, okay, let's talk about literacy curriculum that's adopted. Can you tell me about those decisions? You know, how does that happen? You know, do you have any say in what gets adopted? And overwhelmingly, the principals were like, no, we actually don't. We're just the middle person between what the superintendent wants, and then the superintendent themselves don't either. The state has it. And so it was a real eye-opener to me in terms of like how agency is so complex. You know, it's complex for students, but it's also for teachers, and it's also for administrators. And so I feel like I really learned so much by writing the book, and then just this constant kind of awareness of agency. It informs, you know, the way that I work with my students in my courses at WSU. It's, you know, giving them a say and being vulnerable enough to say, you know, I don't know, let's find out together. And I think it's not only good teaching, but I think it's essential to developing, you know, socially just classroom environments where we really honor and deeply respect kids and students.
No, I know you already gave me the example of, you know, a little Bobby Bush hog from your book. Do you have any from your book, though? Do you have any other case studies or examples of where, you know, teachers have transformed their classroom successfully by implementing just the principles of student agency?
Yeah, I think a couple things. So there's a couple different projects, like there's, and I think it's in chapter 3, but there was a way that the one student really worked to develop a wish tree at her school, which a wish tree was informed by one of the books that the class had read, which was, you know, they put wishes on a tree. And so it was a way to build a more kind of an inclusive school environment. Another example was when a student, after reading a book, wanted to do a food drive. And so the teacher really supported the student in that manner to kind of develop a food drive. And so I think the one thing I wanted to share too is that teachers have real strong ideas about what agency is. And so in the chapter, I think it's chapter 8, I pulled out a few, agency means having a choice and letting my ideas be heard to do what I'm interested in. And so that's what a student says, right? Having a voice in what I want to learn about in school and the way I want to learn it. It means that you have a say in what you want to do. And so I asked the same questions to teachers. And I said, hey, what do you think student agency mean, means and how would you actually implement it? And so teachers in the book really gave some really powerful examples. So collaborative projects, independent work where students get to choose, for instance, like in a movement class, in science class, they have a practice called sharing and thinking where students share and they make decisions about what they want to do in terms of class norms and developing trust. And so in the book, there's quite a bit of examples of concrete examples of how teachers have implemented it. And also, I think just as powerful are students' perspectives. So from third through 12th grade, what their perspectives are on what they think is student agency and how they would like to see it and where the gaps are. So one of the gaps was that students said, you know, they really want to have a voice. And on one hand, and then the teachers agreed, but then when I asked the students if they felt they had a voice, many of them said no. And so there's some powerful sort of kind of counter examples about what it doesn't look like. And I think that's a good balance to connect with what's missing, but also opportunities.
Do you have an opportunity, with what you do, aside from a broad dissemination? I mean, do you get to see some of your research implemented locally? I mean, are you able to interface with actual like school districts?
Okay. So that's really where I love to be. I mean, I really love to be in classrooms. That's really my passion. And so I've been really fortunate over the last couple years. COVID has sort of, filtered that at this point, but I'm hopeful soon. But I've been actually getting quite a bit of emails from people in different states and also some colleagues in Australia about the work around agency and some of the ways that they want to implement it into the reform that they're doing as well.
I've heard Australia is a nice place, but don't travel there. They've got big spiders. So
yeah, I know.
Lots of big spiders.
I feel like there is some getting more and more interest for it. And I think within schools, I just came from a project up in the region where we did some focus on that as well. And really, it's one of my limitations is that's how I see things. Is ways to support agency. So if you're working with me, like you're gonna get it anyways. So with after school book clubs or in my class or talking as a colleague to do a research project together, like I'm really all about, what's your input? What do you wanna do? How can we support it? And so you can even ask my 6-year-old about what agency is and he'll tell you, so I feel like I'm not very sophisticated in that way. It's just kind of, it is what it is and it's, I might not call it that when I'm having a conversation with the principal, but that's what it is.
Well, you have your own kids, and I'm wondering, because, I coach baseball, like I've coached Little League, and there's always that one dad who knows everything, I'm wondering if in your own kids' schooling, you're a very hands-on parent, or you're able to do things more from a systematic mm-hmm. perspective, right? You appreciate the institution or mm-hmm. How that goes.
Well, I've learned I've learned in good hard lessons about how I'm a mom first and foremost. Without it's like a funny thing happened the other day where Mabel wanted to do something and I'm like, oh yeah, tell me how you think you should do that, like tell me more. And she's like, Mom, sometimes I really love that you are a teacher, but then sometimes
until she gets to be a teenager, then.
Yeah. So it was one of those like, yes, I appreciate it, but yes, I'm not the best at it, but I'm learning how that even though everything's about agency, maybe there's some channels for it.
So, I neglected, we should have said even a wider context. You mentioned a variety of roles. We're of course super glad that you're here as an associate professor. We poached you from a nearby university, of course. But take me through how did you get into education? How did you get into the classroom in the first place? And, how did that become your interest? And then work your way to our college now, like how did it come to be that we were so blessed to get Margaret Vaughn?
Well, I feel the same way. I grew up in Bridgeport, which is an inner city. And then I went to college in Philadelphia at UPenn and always in a city, loved city. So I really wanted to do city planning. That was my interest.
Okay.
Yeah. And I know that that's a connection with you. So city planning and urban planning, and that's really what I went into as an undergrad. So I did urban studies. But then I sat in on a lot of meetings, and I realized for me and how I see the world is that I really want to get out and do things and get it. I really wanted a little bit more direct access. And so I always loved teaching. It was something I was super passionate about. And what I found is being a teacher provided me with a direct access point into communities that was sort of more direct for me than, let's say, urban planning or the several meetings that I know meetings are a part of life, but I want to get in there and do it and get, you know, get dirty and messy with it all. So I actually went to, I graduated college and then I got a master's in certification in that way. So I did like a, called the Balanced Literacy Reduced Class Size Initiative that the City of Philadelphia put on for college graduates. And so they paired me with a mentor teacher for a year. And then I worked on my master's, we're getting certified. And just that was the start of the journey. So back then. So, and then just, you know, lots of extra teaching and learning. And then I kind of fell into getting a doctorate, to be honest. I never envisioned leaving the classroom. It was just always something that I loved. But where we lived in North Carolina, I wanted to teach in the summer at a college just to extend my thinking and learning. And you needed a doctorate. And I thought, oh, okay. And so I actually applied for a scholarship, like a writing scholarship. And it was a national scholarship put on by Horace Mann. And I won. And it was a big enough stipend that allowed for me to take a year worth of classes for free. And my doctorate program had a kind of year tryout program where you could still be, but you didn't have to be committed. And I thought, well, this, I feel like the universe is telling me to try this out. I won the scholarship and I, you know, so I started it. And then I loved the research. I loved the thinking of, like, all of a sudden now, instead of having 20 students, I could work with 25, you know, pre-service teachers or in-service teachers. And then that would be that many more kids that we could potentially reach together. And so for me, that kind of was the bug in terms of getting that. And so right after I graduated, I got a job at the University of Idaho and love the community. I love the school districts and the teachers and the colleagues and the people that I worked with there. And then love WSU. I love the, you know, the camaraderie and the, you know, the colleagues. And I knew several of them by my work through UI. And I love and feel so privileged and honored to be able to be in the community and service now even broader regions. You know, I mean, now I can really extend further out into the Palouse and also in the Pacific Northwest. And it's just, it's really an honor and just kind of, you know, a bit of a dream come true, to be totally honest.
Yeah. And now I see you in a new light too. You're, when you talk about urban planning, now all I can envision is you having your little first grade children open The Death and Life of Great American Cities by Jane
Jacobs.
That
book.
I'm sure you
My
have.
My copy is so worn.
Well, Margaret Vaughn, I sincerely appreciate you joining me. I know that the book was something you were excited about, but I wanted to have you join us on Zoomed In for quite a while, ever since stealing you away from the University of Idaho. And of course, two cities close together, they're not competition. We work together quite a bit, actually. But super glad you're with us. And if you, of course, hadn't heard of Margaret Vaughn or Agency in the Classroom or any of that stuff, then that's my fault, but we'll get the word out there. We'll keep pushing it and make sure that that all of the children, you know, that we can have this opportunity to use this agency in the classroom. The teachers know how to facilitate that, and administrators know as well. So, yeah, thank you so much, Margaret.
Thank you, Brandon. This has been a pleasure. It's so much fun. So,
and since you're WSU now, you got to say go Cougs.
Oh, go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
Thanks again.